Welcome to There is a Solution, Big Book Newcomers Returning Members Meeting. My name again is Donna M. There, and I am a compulsive overeater. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, an additional podcast, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The link will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After this share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. I'd like to welcome Joanna, a compulsive overeater from Toronto.
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm going to start my timer. I have 30 minutes, I believe.
Yes.
My name is Joanna. I am a food addict and a compulsive overeater. Oh, your timer is nice and visible for me. I will just go ahead and use that. I will start off by saying that I celebrated 25 years of abstinence in November. So yeah, it's about 25 and a half years. And have been maintaining a weight loss of, I don't know, about 45, 50 pounds since I got abstinent in 2000, aside from two abstinent pregnancies where I did gain some weight, but they were babies. So I'm just going to share my story. This is what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. I do not speak for OA. This is just my story. So just back to the beginning, I would say I always had a very special relationship with food from the very start. I can remember long before I started using food, just experiencing something in my body that sort of seemed different than how I'm an only child, but I grew up with my cousins and they just weren't like me with food. I could see that from a very young age. And I'll give one example. I remember going to sleepaway camp with my cousin, who was a couple of years older, and we both got sent care packages right at the beginning. And mine, they each had these big milk cartons of chocolates, and mine were gone in 2 nights. I was seven. And I remember at the end of the summer, 2 months later, being in her bunk and seeing the carton there. 2 months later. And I asked her for one and she gave it was full. And I was so little and I still remember being stunned that she had this virtually untouched giant milk carton of chocolates that had sat beside her head for 2 months. And so, and I was not a chubby kid. I was very active and athletic, but there was definitely something there laying in wait for me with food. And so that took a turn when I hit puberty. I have no idea if I was actually gaining weight at around 11 or if my father just had a radar for my body changing. But he started calling me fat, and I'll never forget the first comment he made about my body. It was some off-the-cuff remark about how fat I'd gotten. And I just remember it because it was the first time in my life, I think I was 11, that I looked down at my body and I was like, huh? Fat? What? Like I had never thought of myself that way. I had always been very carefree and very active. So that moment was like the switch went on, and I started to see my body in a very different way. And, it went from there. By 12, My parents split up when I was 12. I moved with my mom, and she started working full time, and she would leave me $20 every day, and I would go to the supermarket and just buy food with $20, which is quite a lot back in the 80s. And I would just eat all day by myself. By the time school started, I was going into grade 7. I probably had gained 20 or 30 pounds. That was the beginning of what would be almost 20 years of repeating a cycle of losing and gaining and losing and gaining and losing and gaining. That summer, I remember food for the first time becoming my best friend, my companion, my security, my safety. I'd gone from two parents and, lots of friends on my street and popular to moving to a new neighborhood, no friends, finished elementary school, and my parents were gone. So I was alone and I was lonely, and food solved everything. All summer, it was just me, my treats, and the TV. And that was a habit that stayed with me forever. Whenever anything got uncomfortable in my life, any feeling, anything challenging, anything, it was just the safety and the comfort and the companionship of my food. So, like, that was my everything. So by the time I got to high school, I'm from Montreal, so that would have been grade 7 to 11. My dad was very invested in my weight. My dad is a just fell short of being a professional athlete, and my being overweight was the great shame of his life. And he was very invested in my losing it. And so he would pay me to lose weight. He would put $1,000 in my bank account to lose if I lost 30 pounds. And we did that dance over and over again every year at high school. And so I really got into this cycle that lasted from age 12 to age 31, where I would spend almost a year binging. The whole year was binging, just packing on first 30, then it was 35, then it was 40, then it was 45 pounds. It was always increasing. And then I'd embark on a massive weight loss adventure. And that really became part of my disease as well, was the getting it off. And there was almost nothing I would not do to get that weight off my body. The only thing I couldn't do, and it was like a great failure and shame to me, was stick my finger down my throat. But otherwise, I did laxatives. I compulsively exercised. I would take any drug you gave me that suppressed my appetite. So I was often on some kind of speed at all times, just going days and days and days without putting any food in my mouth. And I would get skinny. And then I would hit that magic number and I would start the whole thing again and just pack back on the 30, 40, 50 pounds. And again, like, I did that every single year, alternating all through high school and all through my 20s and right up until my wedding. And so by the age of 30, I was a newlywed and I had lost yet again a ton of weight for my wedding. I was nice and slim at my wedding. And then the minute the guests left, I hit the buffet dessert table at my wedding and started putting the weight back on immediately. So had this moment, and it really, really was my rock bottom, where I was lying in my bed. My wedding, my honeymoon had just passed a few months before. I think I'd been a size 4 at my wedding, 6 maybe, and I was between a 12 and a 14, and it was 2 months later. And that's how fast it happened. The weight coming off took always like about a year. The weight coming on could take 2 months. And I was lying in bed and I was thinking about my closet. And in my closet, there was every size of clothing from size 4 to 18. And I was between the 12 and the 60, 14, and just a few months before I'd been a six. And I just remember thinking at 30, this is going to be my life for the rest of my life. Like, I got it. Like, I'm screwed. Like, there's nothing left for me to do. I had done every single diet that existed. I don't think there were any I didn't try. At that point, I had been running. I had a system where, depending how much I binged, I would run for 100 minutes. That seemed to feel like a balance. But my knee was hurting, and I couldn't run. It was just coming apart at the seams. Like, the whole thing was going off the rails. And I had like a deep, I wouldn't say I was suicidal in that. Like, I was going to kill myself, but I very clearly did not want to live like that anymore. And I was thinking about my aunts who were all like me. They were in their 60s by then, and I had watched them lose and gain the same 100 pounds since I was a little girl. And I knew that that was my life. That was going to be my life, and there was no way out of it. And by the grace of God, I made an outreach call to Overeaters Anonymous. I should mention, I had gone to Overeaters Anonymous at 19. I don't know where or how I heard about it, but I did. And I went to a meeting. It was in a hospital in Montreal. And I went to a meeting at 19. And my God, was I not ready for that? It was just, it was, I was so not ready. I had, another 12 years of binging and dieting ahead of me to do. And I still needed that, obviously. But I guess it never left my psyche. And so after my wedding, when I was starting to spiral, I made a call, and I reached Betty, and she told me to try going to Glebe Road. And Glebe Road happened to be next door to my business. Like, literally, the church was literally next door, and I felt like that was just about the most amount of effort I could make to get to commit to, was walk next door after work. And luckily for me, it was first a closed meeting, and then it was followed by a speaker meeting. So you got two meetings for the price of one. And that was really good for me, because I was not willing to do anything more than that one day, but I really got a lot out of that one day. It packed a punch. And so I walked into that church, and I just remember feeling so depressed about it, and I didn't want to be there. And yet, the minute people started sharing, it was a small circle, but they were telling my story. And as much as I hated it, I knew that I was one of these people. This was me. I had never heard my story before. I had always been the fat one of my group of friends. I had in my family, like with of my cousins. So I had never really heard my story. And I think there was a couple of, I heard this at another speaker sharing about the God shots the other day, and it got me thinking about the God shots in my life. And there were a couple very early on. And the first one was on my first meeting. Right after the speaker, I got up to leave the room fast. I got up to like bolt from that room and run out. And somebody chased after me. And this man was, he was also in AA. He had 20 years of sobriety, and he chased me down, and out of nowhere, to this day, I hadn't said a word about myself. There was no way he could have known my story. And out of nowhere, with no preamble or anything, he said, I've been maintaining a 60-pound weight loss for the past 5 years, and I haven't had to step on a treadmill in 5 years. Now, he could have said he was maintaining a 60-pound weight loss, and that would have enticed and intrigued me. But when he said that, because he added that he used to have to think to run to manage his weight, and I was at this place in my life where I was hanging by a thread to the running to keep the weight as much as I could off, but my knee was screwed up, And a personal trainer had told me along the way that with my type of body, I would have to run 10 miles a day to not have a big behind. Like my head was just so full of shit. And this guy said the just about only thing that could have brought me back. He said, you can lose weight without having to run. And that was, it was like the clouds parted and the angels sang. And he is the only reason I came back. And for me, that was the first God shot that, started to show me that there was a power greater than myself. Another one came a few months later. I read the OA 12 and 12. I was getting a lot out of the OA 12 and 12. I really like at that point, it was all I could connect with. Just and people kept saying, get this big book, get this big book. And I was very much like, no, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not going to relate to that language. I don't even want to bother. And I just, I just for those first few months, I kept only reading the OA 12 and 12. And binging, I was binging. I was going to the meeting. I never missed the Wednesday group. Like that was a commitment I had made. I never missed a Wednesday group, but I would sit there planning my binge and then I would leave and I would binge and I would read my OA book while I was binging. And then finally, after I'm going to say 3 months, because I came in right after Labor Day and my abstinence date is November 13th. So 2 months later, I read the big book. And the chapter that got me was more about alcoholism. And this was the part that I read that really, they talk about the spiritual awakening or the shift or the flip upside down. And this one I read was the game changer. And I substituted food, and I'm going to substitute food here again. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real food addicts, compulsive overeaters. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our eating careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could eat like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he would control and enjoy his eating is the great obsession of every abnormal eater. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were addicts. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people had to be smashed. And it was almost like every puzzle piece of my life to that point clicked into place. I got it. Every moment, I remember sitting with friends at a bakery in my 20s, and they were both thin and normies. And I was on another diet, and I had a glass of water, and they were eating home big giant cookies and hot chocolate with whipped cream. And when they were full, they left half the cookie. One of them scooped the whipped cream off. And there I was drinking water. And I remember thinking at that bakery, why am I the fat one and I'm drinking water and these two skinny people are like eating all this? I never understood, but I knew if I began, I would not be able to stop, and that would lead me down a road of I'd be 50 pounds bigger in a month. So I knew something was different, but I never had words or language. I also knew of alcoholics. And so when I read that, I remember thinking like, oh my God, I am like an alcoholic. I had always thought of myself as a fat pig with no willpower and no self-control. And for whatever reason, for me, the admitting I was an addict felt so much less shameful and insulting and embarrassing. I was like, I would rather be an addict. I would rather be an alcoholic with food than a fat pig with no self-control or willpower or, whatever. And kind of set me free from this albatross of shame that I had had around my food addiction. And even the dieting, we will try to eat like normal people and then diet like normal people. I couldn't even diet like a normal person. Like I knew, at a certain point when my friends started having babies, they might go to Weight Watchers to shed the 10 pounds. I could not do that. For me, it was an all out, bulimic starvation, whatever it was to get it off, and then the same sort of compulsive, out of control eating in the other direction. And every time I would hit goal weight, I would try to have one piece of the thing and maintain. And when I read this, I was like, oh, Joe, you will never maintain. That is not on the table for you. And it was freeing. It wasn't, I didn't take it kicking and screaming. And I think I was so rock bottom because I had gone to an OA meeting at 19. So I was pretty far gone at 19. So that by 30, 31, I literally was, well, I didn't want to live anymore the way I was living. So I am so grateful because for me, that was not just the spiritual awakening, but it was a step one moment that I can say I have never wavered on in 25 plus years. Like it is the one thing that my program is not perfect. I have, my love affair with OA has gone in and out over the decades, but I have never, ever not thought I am a rock bottom addict with food. Powerless, can't diet, can't put one morsel in my mouth. And that paragraph I just read is the reason why I haven't. And it was such a turning point for me in my food addiction. And the most beautiful part about that chapter is once I had that moment of admitting I was powerless and I was defeated and there was nowhere left for me to go, you flip a few pages over and there is a solution. And that finally, there was a solution that wasn't a diet. There was a solution where I didn't have to get myself on a treadmill and starve myself and deprive myself. And there was a solution that didn't involve me getting on a scale in front of a room full of people. I would have done anything to not have to run and go to Weight Watchers. So I was thrilled. So that was my step one. And I still look at it as the great gift of my journey in the program that I came in and I got it. As for God, step two, I always believed in God, but I really, really believed he was out to get me. My whole life was an example of all the ways he was out to punish me. So that for me was the work, was to trust this higher power who hated me and who I frankly hated with this problem. And so I took step three, which was made a decision, but the decision, it came in stages. The first decision I made was that I would just keep going to these two meetings. I would never miss a Wednesday meeting. I would just keep going. And the people there kept telling me what to do, and I kept doing the things they said. That was the first decision. The second decision I made came after I read that more about alcoholism and had that kind of epiphany. And I made a list of my binge foods and I knew them like the back of my hand. That was my alcohol. I wrote the list. It came out of me in 2 minutes. And for the first day, the next day, I just had three meals, nothing in between, and nothing on my binge list. And I've been doing that since November 13th of 2000. Another decision that I made was getting a sponsor. I had gone a year without a sponsor. I don't think I asked a sponsor to sponsor me. And full circle, my very first sponsor is here at this meeting. So hi. You know who you are. And that decision was a decision to work the steps. And that's where, I really started to get into four through nine. I will say, in terms of my food plan, as the years went by, I did eventually give up flour and sugar altogether. The binge foods worked while they lasted. And then, like a good addict, everything that I had kept started to get sloppy. So I finally just eliminated flour and sugar, and that was quite freeing as well. So step four through nine, I'll never forget giving away my first big fourth to my sponsor and unloading like just this absolute massive pile of shame and fear for my shoulders. I remember sharing something I thought I'd go to the grave with, and she was like, "Oh yeah, me too." She looked kind of like, nothing was blowing her mind. And that was like another great gift. I wasn't that unique. I wasn't that bad of a person. I wasn't so horrible. And I remember leaving, it was at my store, and I remember leaving just feeling lighter and freer and experiencing such a shift as well with all these fears that I've had for so many years. It was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful experience. And I went on and I did 8 and 9. And one of the big amends I had to make was to my mother-in-law. When my husband's grandfather died, I did not go to the funeral because I felt I was too fat and I had been thin the last time they had seen me. And everything was about me, and how I looked. And I had to make an amend for that. And that was another big turning point for me because I had so much shame about skipping that funeral. And then, steps 10 through 12, that's pretty much what I'm like now and what I do now. And, I'd love to tell you I'm a step 10, never miss a night. I would give myself a needs improvement on step 10. I text my sponsor a lot as things come up. Most nights I'll have a conversation with God about things that, if I was like, oof, I was a bitch today to someone or whatever, I'll sort of chat that out with God. I'm not really big on the checklist. Step 11 has really changed the most for me. When I first came in, I was, I didn't have kids and I was able to spend my mornings. I would write for like an hour and do my prayers. I had my readers. I had the most beautiful routine. But now it's very different, and yet it's so much in many ways so much deeper. I talk to God constantly. I pray constantly. I write like just write letters to God at all times. I meditate all the time. I meditate every night before I go to bed. I meditate when I'm stressed or panicked or scared. I will pause and just do a meditation that I like. And so, although I don't take this luxurious time, and maybe one day when I retire, I will, but right now, I am in constant contact with my higher power. And I wake up, and it's the first conversation I have in my head is just a conversation with God, like, okay, God, what do we got on tap for today? And if I wake up with really dark negative thoughts, which happens a lot, like it's immediately like, God, please restore me to sanity before I even get out of this bed. In terms of, just the do things that I do, I have a home group. I go to 2 to 3 in-person meetings a week, try to get on vision meetings as often as I can. I find them very, very helpful. I call my sponsor almost every day. And, this is a beautiful thing about being around so long. I have some really, really, really good friendships in this program. And when life is challenging or something comes up, I have this like team, this group of people who I speak to every single day, and we are all in recovery. And I don't know how I would have gotten through some really tough years with my teenage daughter. I don't know how I would have gotten through COVID. I don't know how I would have got, I had years of fertility issues, like all these major life things I have gone through with my higher power and my support group. And, I've always said I do not know how people who do not have a fellowship go through the hard things of life. I don't know. And things are hard right now, actually. And thank God I have this community. And then step 12, I sponsor. I speak when asked. I take my sponsees through the same step study that I was taken through. I am part of a step study every Tuesday. And I don't, it's really interesting because when I first came in, if you would have told me I'd be here 25 years later, going to 3, 4, 5, 6 meetings between online and my group, my steps, I mean, I just would have been like, Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Just give me, like, all I wanted was to not just get skinny, because I knew how to get thin. I wanted to get thin and stay at one weight. In fact, by the time I crawled in, I didn't even care. Like, as long as I wasn't really overweight, I didn't care as long as I could stay the same size for longer than a day. Like, I just wanted to have a stable weight. That's it. And then I was going to leave. And instead, I got that. That was just the first little gift that God tossed out. But then, this relationship I have with my higher power, the relationships I have with people who have really gone from being program friends to sisters, like truly the closest people in my life. I've learned how to be a mother here. I've learned how to be a wife here. I've learned how to be an employer here. I've learned everything that has, like, put another way, I was able to achieve things before I came to program. I was engaged. I had a husband. I had a good job. I was smart. I could do things, but I couldn't enjoy any of it. I was not connected to any of it because all I cared about was food and weight, food and being thin. And my mind was always preoccupied with one or the other of those things. And so I can tell you that I could have had my children not abstinent, and as miraculous as it would have been, I wouldn't have been present to it or enjoyed it. When my mother passed, I would have been buried in food. Instead, I was with her, present. She was living in my house till the day she died, and I'll always have that. So these are the gifts that OA has given me long, long, long after the weight came off. And for that, I am truly grateful. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Joanna. You know,